Okay, I'd like to bring this version of the House Resources Committee to order. We are in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Mears, Representative Armstrong, Representative Dibert, Representative McCabe, Representative Sadler, Representative Wright, and myself, Chair Tom McKay. We should be joined by Representative Baker and Representative Rauscher Shorten. We do have a quorum to do business. And I'd like to thank the staff, our normal crew of Zach, Justin, and Isabel today for helping us run the meeting. And I would remind everyone, please put your cell phones on silent. And just in time is Representative Baker. Thank you for coming today, Representative Baker.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So we have three items on today's agenda. First is House Bill 387, which deals with credits for a jackup rig in Cook Inlet. That's House Bill 387. And then following that, we will go back to House Bill 223, which deals with royalty relief. And then we will likely set aside House Bill 388 until our next meeting. So we will now go to House Bill 387, and I bring the bill back before the committee. This is our first hearing, and Trevor Jepson, my staff, will introduce the bill, and I will read the sponsor statement. I go. Okay. All right, so this is the sponsor statement for House Bill 387. As we face the reality of a shortage in natural gas production in Cook Inlet, the backbone of South Central Alaska's energy supply, the urgency to act has never been more critical. Cook Inlet gas has been an invaluable resource as an affordable, reliable energy source that has powered homes, businesses, and industry for decades. Projections indicate a decrease in gas supply in the coming years under current market conditions, a scenario that threatens the energy security of over half of Alaska's population and could lead to our reliance on imported liquefied natural gas, otherwise known as LNG, which is likely to be significantly more expensive. So jackup rigs are specialized offshore drilling rigs necessary for developing Cook Inlet's offshore gas reserves. Currently, the state has only one rig available, a restriction on any significant increase in drilling activity in Cook Inlet offshore. The bill proposes a targeted incentive that will increase the project economics or improve the project economics for investing in another jackup rig to be used in Cook Inlet to drill for and extract natural gas by providing a carry-forward tax credit equal to the costs associated with leasing and transporting the rig to Alaska. House Bill 387 has a clear goal to increase exploration and production activities, thereby enhancing Cook Inlet gas reserves and increasing gas production. I urge my colleagues of the 33rd Legislature and the people of Alaska to support House Bill 387 as a step towards energy development, economic resilience, and the long-term prosperity of our great state, in addition to a large increase in local job creation. So thank you for your attention, and I will now turn it over to Mr. Jepson.
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Chair McKay. Thank you, Chair McKay, and the rest of the House Resources Committee for being present here today for the initial bill hearing on HB 387 relating to a Cook Inlet jackup rig credit. I know we've harped on this a lot, but I don't think it'd be appropriate to introduce any of these Cook Inlet bills without mentioning. But as this committee and the legislature as a whole is well aware, a projected Cook Inlet gas shortage in both the near term and long term threatens the energy security of South Central Alaska, with a potential shortfall as early as 2027. In a July 2023 public opinion poll, South Central residents showed a high level of opposition to importing natural gas at 72% and a high level of support for incentives for oil and gas companies at nearly 60% to find and produce more Cook Inlet gas. While residents' opposition for imports decreased markedly if they were convinced LNG imports would be significantly cheaper, it's likely that won't be the case. Many reliable stakeholders in the state, such as NSTAR and the Alaska Energy Authority, expect LNG imports to be more expensive than locally produced Cook Inlet gas. To avoid the potential economic impacts of rapidly increasing energy costs and take public opinion into account, the legislature owes it to Alaskans to try and find solutions to incentivize more Cook Inlet gas exploration, production, and development. Figure 1 shows projected fuel costs of coal, natural gas, LNG, and diesel for the next 16 years and was put together by the Alaska Energy Authority. Once again, these are just projections, and no one actually knows 100% what the price to the customer will end up being. However, sitting around and hoping that the price will come in at roughly the same price as Cook Inlet gas without any other action is not in the best wishes or best interests of Alaskans. Jackup drilling rigs, as Chair McCabe mentioned, are specialized drilling rigs in the MODU or Mobile Offshore Drilling Unit class. They're intended for relatively shallow waters, up to roughly 500 feet, and these rigs consist of a floating hull that can either be self-propelled or pulled by a barge to a drilling location. The rigs have extendable legs that then provide the support for the rig on the seafloor. You can see in this graphic here, it actually shows the four classes of mobile offshore drilling units with drill ships and semi-submersible drill rigs used for deep water and jackup rigs and drilling barges used for offshore shallow waters. So there's currently only one jackup rig in Cook Inlet, and HB 387 is solely aimed at getting a second rig and then potentially a third into the future. And that second rig will be required to adequately explore for and develop gas reserves in Cook Inlet. The current jackup rig in Cook Inlet, Spartan 151, will be tied up for drilling primarily for Hilcorp in the foreseeable future and for them to fulfill their firm gas contracts, which they have online through 2728, I believe, with MEA and Chugach, and then through 2033 with NSTAR. And while they're in talks to release the rig to Hex Fury this fall for them to drill a development well off of their platform in the Kitchen Lights unit, any type of major development, including a large-scale drilling plan or developing Cosmopolitan, is going to require a second rig. There's just not the rig time for the Spartan available. And if you look at that, the DNR curve where they show the decrease in production from Cook Inlet, a lot of that is based on the fact that there's just not a second rig there, so that development of these other oil and gas plays is just not going to be possible. And in addition to developing those known gas reserves in Cook Inlet on state land, there's federal leases in Cook Inlet that are in too deep of waters for the Spartan to even operate. So we need an upgraded piece of drilling equipment to develop some of those southern Cook Inlet leases. As we've seen by market interest, investing in Cook Inlet exploration and production is just not a very popular option right now. The primary factors come down to risk and rate of return. The high cost of operation in Cook Inlet directly impacts both of these factors. The state subsidizing the purchase or the fixing up of a rig developed to specifically to develop Cook Inlet offshore reserves partially offsets both risk and rate of return for potential project economics. Yes, there is risk to the state involved, as a potential rig cost could be roughly $50 million. But a silver bullet solution to the gas conundrum the state finds itself in with no risk at all is just not a realistic solution. And then once again, if we highlight the poll conducted this summer, Alaskans want incentives. I think they realize that incentives are going to be the way that we can further develop Cook Inlet. And once again on the poll, if it's a very highly unpopular opinion right now to import LNG, roughly 70%, you can only imagine the public opinion would probably grow if those imports come in and people's energy bills start rising markedly over the years, every year. We'll get into the actual details of the credit now. This is a Title 43 tax liability reduction credit with a carry forward provision. It's not a cash credit. It's not money coming out of the state treasury. Currently in the bill, it's equal to 100% of the cost for purchasing and transporting the jackup rig to Alaska. And this applies only to jackup rigs for Cook Inlet. We plan on adding language that would ensure the rigs are used in Cook Inlet. Right now, that is not present in the bill. We have an idea to potentially say that to receive the credit, you'll need at least a 3-year drilling contract. So that way, we're incentivizing not just transporting the rig to Alaska, but actually using that rig to drill in Alaska for an extended period of time. We're also open to a variety of deals from the committee. We introduced the bill kind of high level so we could have these conversations on the record as we think is appropriate with any oil and tax credit bill. And we're open to talking about sunset clauses, limiting the credit value, and any other member suggestions. And then finally, there is no significant risk to the state, as Alaska will either benefit greatly from a second rig being here, scheduled to drill for a number of years, and then we'll see that increased drilling, or the credit just won't be utilized if it doesn't increase project economics enough to get a second rig to Alaska.
Okay, I want to make a quick comment to Mr. Jepson. A second bullet, it's almost highly likely that the rig would be leased and not purchased. So I thought that's an important designation to make. So second bullet, it would be leased and transported to the inlet.
Okay. Thank you, Chair McKay. And just to add on to that, when I was consulting people in the industry, and there are people talking about potentially purchasing the rig, but purchasing or leasing are both very valid options.
Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start off with a technical dirty question, if I may. Through the chair to Mr. Jepson, when we're talking about the limitations of the current jackup rig to reach other federal leases and that it would be a desire for that to happen, is that limitation of depth specific to that particular jackup rig or to that style of rig? And if it's to that style of rig, do we want to be looking at the a different type of drill rig?
Representative Mears, through the chair, it's just to that particular rig. I believe the Spartan has a capability of 150 to 200 feet, so you need to add another couple hundred feet to that, which would be a more expensive, more capable rig. I don't think at this point in time there's any interest in doing deep water offshore in the Cook Inlet. So it would just be an upgraded jackup rig necessary for those federal leases.
Yeah, Representative Mears, different jackups have different leg heights, so they can work in deeper water. So you just would determine where you wanted to drill, and then you would get the appropriate size jackup to reach those depths of water depths. Ocean water depths.
Yep, just want to make sure we're asking for the right piece of equipment.
Yep. Yep. You have another question?
Just one? No.
Yeah, no, sorry. That's all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Jepson, do we have an idea about the cost of what it would be either to own or lease and the transportation? The previous statute that dealt with jackup rigs and credits had a $20 million limit on it. So just what kind of scale are we talking about?
Representative Mears, through the chair, I'm glad you brought up the other credit because I think we should have a discussion about that and the differences. So we're hearing that the estimate for purchasing the rig and getting it here would be roughly between $50 to $75 million. And if you compare this particular credit to the other credit you mentioned under 4355025L, that credit was a direct cash payout credit based on the cost of an exploration well. So this is the cost of purchasing and just getting a rig here. So we're incentivizing getting a rig here and getting it drilling. The previous credit was trying to incentivize these exploration wells and was just paying out credits 100% to somebody who drilled the well. So it's significantly less risk with that old credit because you were 100% covered if you drilled a dry hole, as long as you get your well down for less than $25 million. That particular credit also was aimed at the first three wells being drilled with a jackup rig. So the credits are fundamentally different in the sense that to utilize this credit, the rig would actually have to be leased out for a 3 to 5 year period. Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense to bring the rig here at all.
Follow up, Representative Mears.
I'll try and limit myself because it sounds like we're going to have more discussion. But through the chair to Mr. Jepson, I really appreciated the presentation on Monday and giving a lot of context. And one of the things that we're balancing against here is tax credits and what taxes were you applying it to? Property taxes, and how long would it take to make that like how long would this be on the books for somebody purchasing a jackup rig since the tax liability is relatively smaller than that price?
Representative Mears, through the chair, we purposely made it very broad and just applied to all Title 43, which deals with both corporate income tax to all oil and gas taxes. And the reason why we did that was it doesn't just limit an oil and gas company to potentially bringing the rig to Alaska. You could potentially see a native corporation or a transportation company that has a high corporate income tax be incentivized to purchase or get the rig here to the state. Whereas, once again, to compare to the old jackup rig credits, that was essentially just for oil and gas companies because it was based on drilling a well. And oil and gas companies are the only companies that drill oil and gas wells. And as far as how long it would be on the books, that's totally dependent upon the corporate income tax or the production tax, property tax that's paid by the entity that brings the rig here. So if a ConocoPhillips or if a Hilcorp were to bring the rig here, they'd probably pay it off relatively quickly, or it'd apply to their tax liability. But if a smaller entity were to bring the rig here, it'd probably take a number of years. If we're going to keep this at 100% of the cost, and the rig would be in the $50 million range.
Okay, Representative Sadler has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I like the general idea. I like, we've heard the chairman frequently talk about the necessity for this infrastructure to get more gas out of Cook Inlet. I've got kind of a series of questions, but just to check a few boxes here. So this tax credit could be applied against any Title 43 tax, whether it's corporate income tax, oil and gas taxes, anything. So it's
Representative Sadler through the chair, that is correct.
Okay. And who would qualify? Anybody who would put the money up? I don't know if the tax credit would go to the original purchaser, and if they wanted to lease out to somebody else, that would be their own business. Let's see. A third question was, you mentioned it's between 50 and 70. I think it's $50 million to buy, and then how much to transport? Can you break down those costs a little bit? Again, they're all kind of speculative, but just some idea.
Representative Sadler, through the chair, I have not done a full cost analysis on this. But what I can say is the estimates we're hearing are in the $50 to $75 million all-in range for both purchasing the rig and transporting it here.
If I may follow up?
Follow up, Representative Sadler.
Sure. Then it gets into more. The big question is how long this bill would offer the credit for buying and transporting to Cook Inlet. I don't see anything in the bill that would require it to remain for any amount of time. You know, someone could, you know, buy, ship up, cock up the credit, and leave, I guess. If they produce gas, they can sell the machine, sell the rig elsewhere. But is there any assurance that a rig will maintain its operations? And, you know, we hope it will, but can we guarantee or hold them to drill for 5-10 years in Cook Inlet?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, we have an amendment drafted that we planned on putting in the CS that would do just that. It would require that the rig would be used in Alaska for a minimum of 3 to 5 years. We still don't know exactly what the perfect amount of years is. But we have that going and plan on putting it in there, so we're not just used as a pass through location, yeah. Where then the credit is just, you know, doesn't work in the best interest of Alaskans.
And if I may, last question,
Sadler,
I'll cede the field. Then would the presence of a second jackup rig in the Cook Inlet Basin devalue the existing Spartan 151 rig? Would it mean less work for it? Would it? My hope is that they can both have plenty of work to do, but just what effect would that have on the one rig now operating?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, somewhat of a difficult question to answer from my seat, but what I can say is if we want any major development in those summer months, May to roughly September, October, we're going to need two rigs going, and we're going to need them going just about all the time. So in order for it to make sense to bring that second rig here, there would need to be a plan of development for a company that says, hey, we can't do this unless we get a second rig. So that's why we're going to bring this rig up. Hilcorp would likely be using the Spartan rig nonstop in that same time period. Okay. So I guess overall, the credit, while it's targeted at jackup rig, the overarching idea is to increase project economics for a large-scale development project in Cook Inlet.
Sure. Thank you.
So just to add a little more context, there are two major areas where there's fleets of jackup rigs. One is obviously the Gulf of Mexico, the other is Southeast Asia. So it would be up to the operator or whoever had the money and wanted to make this investment you would bring a jackup on a heavy lift, what's called a heavy lift vessel, through the Panama Canal from the Gulf of Mexico or from Southeast Asia, where you could avoid going through the Panama Canal. So that's just to give you some idea where these rigs might come from if this ever did happen. Okay. Do you want to do the sectional, Mr. Jepson? I think it's pretty short.
That's just one page. You can do sectional. It's a willow chair. We can do more questions, too. So section 1 amends AS 4398 by adding 4398080, which introduces the tax credit we've been discussing for a person installing or bringing, transporting a cook inlet, or excuse me, a jackup rig to the cook inlet sedimentary basin. And section 2 just provides for the effective date. As mentioned multiple times in this presentation, we do plan to do a committee substitute. We have a number of ideas and amendments drafted, and we look forward to discussing those with committee members, both on and off the record, if anybody has questions.
I didn't quite, was that a full, okay.
Yes, please, sir.
Okay, Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair to Mr. Jepson. Have you done any economic analysis on what the cost benefit would be to the state of Alaska?
Representative Mears, through the chair, once again, we're getting into highly speculative economic analyses if we were to do that, because then that goes back to, okay, we have to believe that LNG imports are going to be significantly more expensive. And if we do believe that, and we're seeing a doubling or tripling of gas price the next 10, 15 years, then a $50 to $100 million credit would far offset the cost to the ratepayers over that time period. And we're talking hundreds of millions or billions of dollars in extra fuel costs in that same time period. So from a high level extrapolation, it seems pretty clear that the credit would be worth it if we can avoid that. But once again, it comes back to the level of risk that the state is willing to take.
And again, we're leveraging gas that's in the ground, oil and gas that's in the ground that may never get produced. And if it doesn't get produced, then it has no value. Again, no cash out of the treasury. This isn't like the old oil tax credit program of the previous decade. So we want to really emphasize that point. Follow-up question, Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair, to Mr. Jepson. It seems like it would be very valuable to have some estimates and ideas of what that would be and what some of these levers are. I was doing a little more research yesterday, and it looks like the price for imported LNG at the moment is about $12 per MCF. So if now that those contracts are starting to get put in place, we're getting or are being explored, we're getting more data on what that would be. And so we're getting a little bit more certainty on what we could put into a model.
Representative Mears, through the chair, I would say that $12 price is not on any contract written in the state of Alaska. The closest thing we have to any sort of solid data in Alaska is the word of NSTAR President John Sims, who says it would likely come in at the minimum of $16 if we were to do it in the short term. And there would be strong upward pressure on that to continually increase over the years. So $12 long-term LNG import prices would be great. There's no evidence currently that would apply to Alaska.
Follow-up, Representative Mears.
Just a quick statement that I'll work on getting more solid references for that, but that was brought to me. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the chance to kind of get their heads around this. But so my understanding is this would provide a tax credit for something that is clearly needed, but the benefit is most immediately realizable by a company that has production or some kind of tax obligation in Alaska, which means they own property, they're producing, they're paying corporate taxes. Correct me if I'm wrong, this is not going to be as valuable for a new entrant into Alaska because they will have to generate some obligation. They're going to have to, they'll have a credit, but they're going to have to put cash in the barrelhead to purchase, to transport, and begin drilling. And until such time as they do that, they're going to be, their operating and cap expenses going to be in the red for a couple of years, for many years possibly. Does that mean this is all that darn effective for anybody who's a new entrant, or is this targeted at somebody who's already operating?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, to capitalize on being the company to receive the credit would probably not be economical for a new entrant. However, if a non-oil and gas company were to bring the rig here with the idea of leasing it out, then that would help a new entrant because they would have a second jackup rig available to lease. So it's a little bit of a downstream effect on the newer entrants, but I don't think a small new entrant company is going to purchase a rig. As Chair McKay mentioned earlier, that's not extremely common, even for big oil and gas companies to purchase rigs.
Okay, very well. Any other questions on the HB 387. Did we want to, you already did the sectional because it's really quick. Okay. So we covered that. All right. Representative McCabe.
Thanks. I'd just like to note for the record on this slide that the line for coal is below $5.
We'll make sure the jackup rig is coal-fired. Like an old steam engine. Thanks, Kim. All right, I'm going to set that bill aside, and then we'll move on to House Bill 223, the Royalty Relief Bill. I bring the bill back before the committee. This is the eighth hearing we've had on HB 223, and we have four amendments that are in our before us. So the first one is Amendment 4, and I'm going a little bit slow to give everybody a chance to find your paperwork. Okay. Brief at ease. Back on the record. So we're dealing with House Bill 223, and we have before us Amendment 4. So Representative Mears, you'd like to move your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment 4.
Object.
Okay, there's been an objection. Representative Mears, would you like to describe your Amendment 4?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, I'd like to thank you for Monday's presentation. That was very helpful in providing additional context, as I've been doing other research as well. From that, it's clear to me that we need a multifaceted plan for South Central and Rail Belt energy, as well as our energy sector in general in Alaska. Our finances are out of balance in the state, and I hope that we'll consider these amendments that I'm bringing forth today as topics that need to be under discussion here in the state. So amendment number four, is some accountability for some long-term continued drilling of at least 10 wells per year in the Cook Inlet Basin, and contains some accountability against oil tax credits that would be applied to other places in the state. So I don't think this would affect operations in the near term, as there's plans for 15 new wells being drilled by Hillcorp in the next several years. But it does provide accountability that at least 10 wells are drilled. With that stated, I am very open to amendments that would raise the number of wells drilled if we wanted to provide a little bit more accountability for more action happening, and then also the addition of a sunset.
Okay, Representative Mears, my first observation is nobody's going to drill 10 exploration wells. Friendly advice might mean development wells. It's just a different, what do you call it, the classification in using the oil industry nomenclature. So is there a penalty here if you drill 9 wells, for example? Is that where we're getting at?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think your question touches on something. It's a hard cliff. You know, a company that did actually try to take advantage of this, did their best, drilled 9 wells. There was a storm. They got a breakage, labor situation. They didn't get that 10th one. Then their investment for those first 9s is going to be come at a much higher cost. So I don't think it's fair to have that hard cliff, that benefits cliff, as it were. The amendment overall seems to undermine the value of the tax credits. You know, there's no carry forward. There's a hard limit. That would tend, frankly, not to incentivize investment and production, which is the important underlying aspect of this bill. So as I see it as being counter to the entire foundation of the bill, I've got to oppose this.
Okay. Any further discussion on Amendment 4? Okay. Wrap up, Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just believe this is opportunity for accountability.
Okay, and who objected? Was it you? Do you remove your objection?
No.
All right, then we will do a roll call vote on Amendment 4. Justin, can you do that, please, for us?
No.
Yes.
No.
Representative McHugh.
No.
Representative Baker.
No.
Representative Sadler.
No.
Representative Wright.
No.
Chair McCain.
No. So on a vote of 7 nays and 1 yay, Amendment 4 has not been adopted. Okay, Amendment 5. Representative Mears, would you like to move your amendment?
Not this time. For Amendment 5, I'd like to move on to Amendment number 6.
Okay, Amendment 5 has been postponed, I should say. So Amendment 6, Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Amendment number 6 is
closed. Please move it.
I apologize that I'd done that. I move Amendment number 6.
Object.
There's been an objection. Representative Mears, please explain your Amendment 6.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment 6 is closing what has been known as the S-Corp loophole. We have seen some changes in our corporate income tax rate with the change of BP to Hillcorp and a significant amount of money per year not coming in corporate income taxes because of that. As part of the fiscal policy working group a couple of years ago, this is one of the recommendations to close this loophole in the order of $47 to $61 million a year. That was the recommendation and the data provided during that process.
Okay, any questions or commentary on Amendment 6? Okay, and wrap up, Representative Mears.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity for offering this amendment. And if it's not considered here, I hope it's considered in other places as we're evaluating our energy tax policy here in the state.
Representative McCabe, you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right, we'll go to a roll call vote on Amendment 6. Justin, can you please call the roll?
No.
Representative Armstrong.
Yes.
Representative Neal.
Yes.
Representative
Johnson. Yes.
Can you speak up?
Representative McCabe.
No.
Representative Baker.
No.
Representative Johnson. Representative Sadler.
No.
Representative Chair McCain?
No.
3 yeas and 5 nays.
So on a vote of 3 yeas and 5 nays, Amendment 6 has not been adopted by the committee. Okay. Amendment 8, if my count's correctly. Amendment 8?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Representative Mears, please move your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment number 8.
Object.
Okay, there's been an objection. Representative Mears, please explain Amendment 8.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The summary of this is it is step-down reduction in oil production tax credits. Again, we need to be looking at our entire energy portfolio and financials throughout the state. This is being addressed over on the Senate side. And the numbers from that is that since 2014, the state has paid out $7.2 billion in credits and is expected to pay out another $8.7 billion in 9 years. So that's about 10% of our budget every year. So this would look to seek a change in reducing that.
Okay. My first impression, Representative Mears, is the underlying bill is addressed towards incentivizing gas production, and this amendment appears to be focused almost exclusively on oil. Are there any other questions on Amendment 8? Representative Sadler.
Just a comment, not a question. This amendment of rate is a wholesale change and some pretty hard-fought state tax policy reform. It's a way bigger, in my opinion, than can be done in an amendment. If it's a want to bring it forth in the bill, that's another thing, but this is kind of beside the point. Yes, technically, you can change the title and put this in there, but I just think it's inappropriate, and I'm absolutely going to oppose it.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on Amendment 8? All right. In wrap-up, Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I look forward to the discussion, as I hope the Senate bill addressing this will come over to the House.
Okay. Thank you. Representative McCabe, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right. We'll go to a roll call vote on Amendment 8. Justin, can you please call the roll?
Representative Sadler.
No.
Representative Wright.
No.
Representative Armstrong.
No.
Representative Mears.
Yes.
Representative Diver.
No.
Representative McCabe.
No.
Representative Baker.
No.
Representative, and Chair McCabe.
No.
Nays, one yay.
So in a vote of 7 nays and 1 yay, Amendment 8 has not been adopted. That takes us back to the main bill, House Bill 223. So we've taken public testimony and we've considered all amendments. So no further work is needed. And I would entertain a motion to move House Bill 223 out of committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move to report House Bill number 223, Work Order 33-LS0886/S, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes from the committee.
Okay, is there any objection?
Object.
Okay, Representative Mears has objected. We will do a roll call vote. And again, Justin, can you please call the roll on House Bill 223?
Representative Sadler.
Yes.
Representative Wright.
Yes.
Representative Armstrong.
Yes.
Representative Mears.
No.
Representative Diver.
Yes.
Representative McCabe.
Yes.
Representative Baker.
Yes.
Chairman Kidd.
Yes.
7 yeas, 1 nay.
So with a vote of 7 yeas and 1 nay, House Bill 223 has been reported from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. So we'll take a brief at ease and sign the paperwork. Okay, we're back on the record, House Resources, considering House Bill 223. This is Chair McKay, and I'd like to add one more sentence to our reporting the bill out of committee, that we also provide the authority for legal services to make technical and conforming changes. I want to make sure that's on the record. And there's a footnote here. Yeah, no, the forthcoming fiscal notes. Okay, so we've covered that. Okay, so our next meeting will be Friday at 1 o'clock. I'm going to set aside House Bill 388, which deals with resource-based lending. We've rescheduled that to a later date. We're waiting on input from AEA and ADIA prior to the initial bill hearing. So with that, I Representative Mears.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity to make a comment. Mr. Chair, I should have been a little bit more forceful in asking to speak prior to my objection earlier. I would like to say that I'm very supportive of our natural gas industry in Cook Inlet. It is the foundation for electricity and heat in South Central Alaska. Our infrastructure is built around it. The storage of natural gas and that expansion is going to be key to our future energy development in South Central. I'm feeling at this moment there's a lot more pieces that we need to explore. I think there needs to be more accountability and more math in the work that we're moving forward. And I would really like to be looking at a suite of things and discussing them and how they're really going to make an impact to our state with some accountability. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mears. Any other comments from committee? Okay, I appreciate your hard work today. And like I said, we'll meet on Friday at 1 o'clock. And we'll adjourn at 2:19 p.m. Thank you.